I am certain that my fellow Americans expect that on my induction into the presidency, I will address them with a candor and a decision which the present situation of our people impels. This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured. It will revive and it will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. In every dark hour of our national life, a leadership of frankness and vigor has met with that understanding and support of the people themselves, which is essential to victory. And I am convinced that you will again give that support to leadership in these critical days. Some of you history experts may know where that's from. Of course, that's Franklin Roosevelt's 1933 inaugural address. It contains one of the most famous quotes thought of when we mention one word, fear. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. But you didn't know the context, did you? It was the way it was said, what was before it and after it. Now you do. I thought you would enjoy hearing the context of that famous quote as we use that to introduce to you today the sermon topic of fear. Recently we had a sermon on the topic of Bible prophecy, and we looked at events that are prophesied to occur between now and then. And that's not fun to do. We don't like doing that. We don't like to hear about that. And when we think of things like that, many of us have feelings of fear. Mr. Franks alluded to this in his recent member letter, actually the one before this one that I read from in the announcements, the one a month ago. He said this in that member letter, quote, "I believe in my lifetime I have never seen world conditions as bad as they are today. Prophetically, we see the stage being set for the events described in Daniel 11, verse 40 through 45, which take place at the time of the end and involve the king of the south and the king of the north. The king of the south will come from an Arab country or group of countries who will attack a union of European nations. Throw into this mix the development of nuclear weapons in Iran, and one would have to be blind not to see the handwriting on the wall." Mr. Jim Franks. So when we read things like that, warning us time is short, many have feelings of fear. And yet, over and over in the Bible, God says words like, "Fear not! Do not be afraid." Why? Why does God use the phrase, "fear not," so many times? That's what I want to talk about in the sermon today, and so that was our title. Why does God say, "fear not"? Well, I believe it's because there are fearful things that we need to face. And so we have encouragement that says to us, fear not in the face of that. Now, yes, we've talked a lot about this lately. We will talk about it again as we certainly go through the Feast of Trumpets, think about these things that are coming. So it's natural for us to be fearful of danger, especially thinking about as we approach the 13th anniversary of 9/11 this Thursday. And we know that's on our minds. We are fearful of anything that would threaten the peace and calm of our everyday, normal lives. So when we are continuously hearing of things that are coming that very well may impact our normal day-to-day routine, then fear enters the picture. We want things to continue as they are, day to day to day, and just let me go about my business. But still, the pages of the Bible continuously tell us to fear not. So as we look at this today, I think it's important for us, as we did with President Roosevelt's address about the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. We looked at that in context. Let's look in context at some of the places where God has told us to fear not and see if we can learn any lessons from that. The first place we're going to look is, you might imagine, in the book of Genesis. So come with me to Genesis 21. The first place, at least in the New King James Version of the Bible, that we see the phrase, fear not. Genesis 21 is the account of when Abraham sent Hagar away into the wilderness with her son Ishmael. Now that was a very sad thing to do. It turned out to be necessary. The family was being ripped apart by jealousy and envy and strife. And so Abraham had the instruction to send them away. Well, for Hagar and Ishmael, things looked pretty bleak for them. That's maybe a bad way of putting it. They were afraid. What are you doing, Abraham? I'm one of your wives. This is your son. How can you do this? Very disappointed at what Abraham had done. Could not understand it. None of this made any sense to her. How could Abraham allow this to happen? How could Abraham's God allow this to happen? I thought he was a God of mercy and love. Verse 16. And then she went and sat down across from him, the boy, at a distance of about a bow shot. And for she said to herself, I don't want to see the death of the son of my boy. And so she sat opposite him and lifted up her voice and she wept. Imagine the scene. She wept bitterly. So afraid, so confused, so disappointed. But verse 17, God heard the voice of the lad. And then the angel of God called out to Hagar, the voice out of heaven, and said to her, what ails you, Hagar? What's wrong with you? Fear not. For God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. So arise, lift up the lad, hold him with your hand, for I will make with him a great nation. So we have here a very unexpected outcome at a time of great fear, disappointment, frustration, and despair. Something happens, they could not have predicted that at all. They could never have expected this to happen. What happens to Ishmael? Verse 19. God opened her eyes, Hagar's eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. And so God was with the lad. Did the lad know that? No. Did Hagar know? No. God was with the lad. And so he grew, dwelt in the wilderness, and he became an archer. He dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. And his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. There's a lot left out of the story there, but what we see happening is Ishmael going from certain death in the wilderness to becoming a skillful archer. I don't know when he used envy in battle. I don't know, but he grows up and mom arranges a beautiful woman, Egyptian woman, for him to marry. I suppose he was pretty pleased with that. It was a different outcome than what, I don't know whether he was old enough at the time to expect something or not. Certainly Hagar was. So Hagar and Ishmael had nothing to fear, did they? It didn't look like it at the time. Hagar was sure that certain death was coming quickly to them. But God had something else in mind that they could have never predicted. Perhaps the most well-known story of fear in the face of certain annihilation is found in the next book of the Bible, Exodus. We have the story of the Israelites coming out of Egypt who are now trapped at the edge of the Red Sea. Now, again, familiar story for us, but in light of what we're talking about, let's read through it again today. Again, imagine being there, what this was like. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with boldness. Verse 9. Unexpected. So the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and he overtook them, camping by the sea, beside Pi, Heroth, and Baal, Zephon. We don't remember those names, but we certainly remember what it must have been like. They're at the Red Sea. You know, mountains around them. No way out. They're trapped. What are they going to do? And now here comes Pharaoh's army. So when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And they said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Didn't we tell you that we wanted to stay in Egypt? How dare you bring us out here into this place?" That's not what they said. If you remember the account of Numbers, they came out with a high hand. They were celebrating. They took the spoils of the Egyptians with them, you know. They're free. "Didn't we tell you we wanted to stay in Egypt? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than should we die out here in the wilderness." And Moses said to the people, "You hypocrites!" No, he didn't say that at all. He said to the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." And Charlton Heston climbs up on that rock and puts out that thing, and the waters part. And well, it wasn't Charlton Heston, but at least he depicts it in a movie for us that we remember. Can you imagine what that must be like to have really seen that? And I think one day God will give us the opportunity to have a vision or see what that was like, creates a movie for us, and what that must have been like. And we can talk to the people who experienced it. But it's one of the most unexpected deliverances of all time. The Red Sea divides and the people walk through the middle of it with the walls of water on every side. Do not fear. Do not be afraid. Trust me. The Lord will fight for you. You shall hold your peace. So we have to look at stories like this as lessons for us today. Have we ever been in the depths of despair and hopelessness, thinking there is no way out? The situation I am in is impossible. I cannot get out. That's what the Israelites thought too. Well, if we haven't been in the past, we might face that yet in the future, a situation like that. But all along, God seems to be telling us, "Fear not! I'm with you. Do not be afraid." Are we going to listen to that in total faith and trust, or will we be filled with fear? From the context of the examples that we're looking at so far, it seems to be that deliverance comes in the way we would have least or could not have ever expected. Could not have predicted, could not have thought of, something we could have never imagined. And then we're saved from the condition. Isaiah 41. The next place we'll see this phrase used is in a millennial setting. We're certainly going to be talking about millennial settings over the next few weeks. I want you to place yourself into the future. Imagine what it will be like those first few days and hours. A scene of utter devastation. The fear that the people had during the time of the Great Tribulation and the Day of the Lord. We have the surviving people of the United States, Great Britain, many other English-speaking nations. Well, actually you have people from around the world, but we'll focus here on English-speaking nations, who have been living in constant fear for their lives, perhaps wondering, how in the world did we survive to this point? Why am I still alive? These people have been scattered abroad, but now they find themselves being gathered to, of all places, the nation of Israel. They're about to receive a special message from Jesus Christ, who they begin to understand now is the one who is ruling in Jerusalem. A message has been prepared for them. They are told to listen. Isaiah 41 and verse 8. But you, Israel, are my servant. Jacob, whom I have chosen, the descendants of Abraham, who was my friend. You, whom I have taken now from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest regions. Remember the another Exodus to come? And now I have said to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you. I have not cast you away. So fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed. I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Behold, all those who were incensed against you shall be ashamed and disgraced. They will be as nothing. Those who strive with you will perish. You shall seek them and not find them. Those who contended with you, those who war against you, well, they'll be as nothing, as a non-existent thing. Verse 13, for I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you. Fear not, you worm, Jacob, you men of Israel, I will help you, says the Lord, and your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. As they hear these words, well, first of all, they might not like hearing themselves referred to as a worm. But then again, after what they've been through, they likely will feel like it, crawling under a rock somewhere. Most will have humble, repentant attitudes, and they are going to rejoice at these words as they are spoken to them. No doubt, they had been in great fear of what was going to happen to them when they arrived back at Jerusalem. They were called to and brought, come back to Jerusalem. Come back to Israel. Why? I don't want to go there. But imagine the relief at hearing this unexpected news of redemption from the one called Jesus Christ. And some will be very confused. But as the news spreads around the world, this is not something that the survivors of that time will have expected. They had expected a range of things. Christians had expected to be raptured off to heaven. Some had expected Allah to provide them the 70 virgins. Some had the great hope of being reincarnated as a cow. That wasn't what they expected. What about us? Do we expect the things that we read here? Do we expect that same kind of help that God will promise these people? Do we expect that same kind of help today? After all, we are God's people, God's chosen, God's called out people today. We don't have to wait for the beginning of the millennium to hear words like that spoken to us. We can hear them right now. Jesus Christ says to us today, we could simply insert the word church or congregation instead of Jacob or Israel above, and the very same message that we read will be read to the people of the world tomorrow. It's us today. Fear not, God says. I am with you. Be not dismayed. I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will uphold you. He's speaking to us. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Those who contend with you, those who war against you, shall be as nothing. For I, the Lord your God, I will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not. I will help you. Do you hear it? Do you hear God saying that to you today? Do we believe that? We must have the courage, just as if God is right here, right now, right beside us, telling us these things. Don't be afraid. I will help you. I'm with you. The next passage we'll examine is in Daniel chapter 10. It's an amazing account here, where Daniel sees a powerful vision of a great angelic being. Some speculation, and that's all it is, may be that this was the Archangel Gabriel. It doesn't matter who it is. This being is portrayed in great majestic power and brightness. Daniel chapter 10 and verse 5. Again, we need to put ourselves into the setting. Imagine that we are here. I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold. His body was like beryl. I don't know how to pronounce that. Beryl. His face like the appearance of lightning. His eyes like torches of fire. His arms and feet like burnished bronze in color. And the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. Sounds kind of like the description of Jesus Christ in Revelation. But we think this may not be. This was an angel. Commentary seemed to point that out. It doesn't matter. Notice then what the angel does. Verse 10. Suddenly, a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and in the palms of my hands. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you. Stand up right now, for I have been sent to you. And while he was speaking this word to me, I stood there trembling. So in this setting, Daniel is terrified. His knees are knocking together. His palms are sweating. He's afraid. We would have been too. And now comes a significant point we must notice. Verse 12. Then he said to me, Do not fear, Daniel. For the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. I have come because of your words. That's amazing. That should give us tremendous hope and confidence before our God. God wants to see that same attitude in us. Did you catch it? He wants us to set our heart to understand. Have we? He wants us to humble ourselves before Him. Again, have we? If we do that, we should expect the same result. God will hear our words. He will act for us, as He did Daniel here. He acts because of the words we speak and because of the humility of our heart before God. Now, yes, everything's according to God's will. But I'll tell you, this attitude of humility, this attitude of setting our heart to understand, that's noticed by God. He will reveal knowledge. Remember why the angel came in the first place. He came to reveal to Daniel prophetic visions of things to come. Prophetic visions of things to come, likely, we believe, in our lifetime today. Verse 14. He says, Now I have come, Daniel, to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days. For this vision refers to many days yet to come. Well, many days have passed. Verse 15, When he has spoken such words to me, I turned my face to the ground and I became speechless. Suddenly, one having the likeness of the sons of men touched my lips. And I opened my mouth and I spoke, saying to him who stood before me. Notice what Daniel's reaction is to the vision that he has seen. The words that have been made plain to him, understanding what's to come in the latter days. And look at his reaction. My Lord, because of this vision, sorrows have overwhelmed me, and I retained no strength. For how can this servant of my Lord even talk with you, my Lord? As for me, no strength remains in me now, nor is any breath left in me. He had a very vivid picture of what's to come. Does this happen to us when we see visions of what's to come? When we see reality on our evening news of what is occurring, and we know that more and more horrible things are about to happen around the world, in our nation, in our state. When we read about it, think about it, about what's coming, it is frightening and it is disturbing. If we had had the vision that Daniel had, if we had seen the things that Daniel saw and probably what John saw on the island of Patmos, recorded for us in the book of Revelation, we had actually seen that, we'd had the same reaction. We'd be weak and breathless too. I have no strength. But we don't really grasp yet what it will be like to the full extent that apparently Daniel did. But what happened next? Verse 18. Then again, the one having the likeness of a man, he touched me. He strengthened me. And he said, O man, greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be to you, Daniel. Be strong. Yes, be strong. And so when he spoke to me, I was strengthened. And I said, go ahead and tell me. I'm ready to listen. Let my Lord speak. You have strengthened me. So do you see the source of our courage and strength? God says, trust me. Be strong. I'm with you. You have nothing to fear. Do we believe it? So we're talking about the phrase, fear not, in context. Given what we've read here in Daniel about Bible prophecy, Daniel's fear of the vision that he saw, John's fear, likely, of what he saw in his vision, what about us today who are living the reality of these visions? We do believe that we are at the threshold of the Great Tribulation. We do know for a fact that we are living in fearful times. So these words in Daniel meant for us today. The headlines change every day, every week. As I was originally working on this sermon, we had about 2 weeks of the rioting in Ferguson, Missouri. It seemed like it was never going to stop. I'm not sure that it has or will erupt someplace else. We're continuing to hear about the uncontrolled spread of Ebola moving from one country to another. The headlines say it's absolutely out of control. Then there's the gruesome story of the journalists who had their lives cut short by ISIS, and I won't go into the description of how. It's pretty gruesome, and you know that. Of course, these people vow to carry out more against these innocent journalists. They would love to carry it out on all of us. Last week, Great Britain elevated their terrorism alert status to serious, meaning they feel an attack against the country is imminent. Russia has invaded the Ukraine. 11 airplanes stolen in Libya. Where are they? 9/11 is next week. The phrase, fear not, starts to kind of get to us, doesn't it? Yet, God is still very much in charge of events in this world. He is very much in charge of events in the church and in our personal lives. And we must not ever forget that. Isaiah 51. This same encouragement that God has given to people throughout the ages, He still gives to you and me today. He hasn't changed. The words are there. The words possibly mean more to us today than they did before. So in Isaiah 51 and verse 7, he says, listen to me. It's like he needs to just shake us and get our attention. Listen to me. You who know righteousness, that's us. Listen to me, you people in whose heart is my law. He says, do not fear. Don't fear the reproach of men. Don't fear what men can do to you. Don't be afraid of their insults. Now, some of us have experienced that to a degree already. Being insulted, mocked, scorned. Yes, those things are hard to endure, but we can expect it to increase. We can expect some of us to suffer violent acts committed against us. Matthew 10 and verse 21 makes that clear. And it also tells us that these acts will come from some in our own families, and we would not have expected that. Brother will deliver up brother to death. The father his child. Children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by everyone for my name's sake. And then he talks about endurance to the end. So that verse seems to be telling us that there is certainly an intense time of hatred, if not actual persecution, coming against God's people. There will be persecution. We will all be hated. We've been warned about it. We've been told to endure to the end, whether that be the end of our lives or the end of this age. We are told here, do not fear. Let's go to Luke 12. I have another phrase where it says, do not be afraid. And and to do not fear. Luke 12 and verse 4 says, I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of... Basically, he's saying, don't be afraid of men. Don't be afraid of those who might rise up against you. Don't be afraid of those who might persecute you or hate you and kill you thinking they're doing God's service. Do not be afraid of those who can kill your body. But after that, there is no more that they can do. I will show you who you should fear. Fear him who after he has killed, if we are allowed to die, he has the power to cast you into hell. He has the power to put us into what we refer to as the third resurrection, of which we will never wake up. That's, of course, who we should fear. And then he tells us something seems like totally unrelated here in verse 6. He starts talking to us about birds. After we've just heard that, are not five sparrows sold for 2 copper coins? And yet not one of them is forgotten before God. The very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than these birds. Now, God seems to be showing us here by a remarkable statistic. And it seems kind of a ludicrous statistic. Come on. The number of hairs on our head? For some, that's not so much of a challenge. For others, it is. The point being, God is acutely aware of us. And He brings it out so much so that I even know how many hairs are on your head. He's involved with us. He's our Father. Imagine how a father knows his little boy. Right? You know your little boy. He's grown up. God's our Father. We're His little children. His love for us is unfathomable. God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. And you know the rest of it. That's the level of love God has for us, our Father. And so this great Father looks down at His children and He says, do not fear. Don't be afraid. I'm here. If that's the case, and if we believe that, how can we be afraid? How dare we be afraid before this great God? He wants us to overcome our natural inclination to be afraid. He says, rise up above that. I'm giving you hope. I'm giving you a promise. Don't be afraid of anything. I'm here. Trust me, God says. Our Father says that. Trust in my ability and my promise to deliver us from evil. And evil is in our world. Evil, our world is falling apart. Our world is collapsing all around us. Many are afraid. This was in the news a couple weeks ago, and if you watch news at all, you saw it repeated in the loop, you know, hour after hour. It was Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, and they had a video of him saying this about the ISIS threat. Quote, this is our defense secretary. The sophistication, wealth, and military might of the Islamic State militants represents a major threat to the United States that may surpass that once posed by Al-Qaeda. They are an imminent threat to every interest we have, whether it's in Iraq or anywhere else. They are beyond just a terrorist group. They marry ideology, a sophistication of military prowess. They are tremendously well-funded. This is beyond anything we have ever seen. End of the quote. Now, when you hear things like that being said by our national leaders under this administration, that's saying something. Clear and present danger. And we know it, and we see it, and we're living it. And next Thursday is an important anniversary, and we're thinking about that. The whole world is. But that's only one threat of multiple threats to our society and to our lifestyle. There are many more. And yet, in the midst of all this, we hear constantly God is telling us, do not fear. Do not be afraid. I'm with you. Trust me. is in this context, in the threshold of, we believe, the threshold of the Great Tribulation, God is telling us not to fear. Yet today, as we had centuries ago, we had some scriptures that have been there all along as Psalm 91. Now we can read Psalm 91 and say, well, that was for then, this is now. I don't think so. I believe Psalm 91 is especially for today. Let's review again what it says in light of what we're talking about. Psalm 91, in verse, well, you could read the entire chapter, but we don't have time to do all of that. You can. Verse 5, you shall not be afraid of the terror by night, the terrorism by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, or the bullets, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness. Where's this coming from? Nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday, like nuclear warfare, a dirty bomb. He says, you know, 1,000 might fall at your side, 10,000 at your right side. It will not come near you. Verse 10. No evil shall befall you, nor any plague come near to your dwelling, because he has given his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. Now, I don't know about you, but I believe that. So why, you know, we have this talk about safety and protection from the evil that's all around us. Why? Why are we protected? The answer is given here too. Let's go back up and read why we have this promise of protection, that nothing will happen, it can happen all around us, but it won't come near us. Why? Verse 2. I will say of the Lord, this is what we need to say, he is my refuge and my fortress. He is my God in whom I will trust. Verse 9. Because you made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place. That's why. Verse 14. Because he has set his love upon me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high, because he's known my name. What do we have here? We have three basic requirements that were given here that result in the protection that we read. Number one, trust God. Number two, dwell with him. And number three, love him. That's what we saw here. Trust God, dwell with him, abide with him, and love him. So you can ask yourself, how am I doing? Do I do that? I can't answer that for you. I barely can answer it for me. But I have to. But I submit that if you would do these things, your fear, anxiety, and apprehension, it will go away. It has to. It cannot exist in that environment. It cannot exist. Fear cannot exist in that atmosphere. 1 John 4, verse 17. What atmosphere? Because he has set his love upon me, I will deliver him. 1 John 4 and verse 17. Love has been perfected. Love has been made perfect, if you will, among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. We need some boldness, do we not? Not timid, not shy, not afraid, not fearful, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. This is our day of judgment, isn't it? Because as he is, so are we in this world. As Christ was in the world without fear, so are we in this world without fear. Verse 18. There is no fear in love, because perfect love casts out fear. Fear involves torment.
It's a mental thing.
Fear involves apprehension. Fear involves fear of punishment. Okay. There is no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear because fear involves being tormented. But he who fears, if you're still afraid, he who fears has not been made perfect in love. Why not? We've been reading over and over not to fear. But we just read here, love casts out all fear. Well, do we have that love or not? Do we have the love of God that's necessary to cast out all fear? What is the love of God? Thought you'd never ask. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 3. Remember back up, we read earlier, because he has set his love upon me, I will deliver him. Now we're reading that perfect love casts out all fear. 1 John 2 verse 3. How do we know that we really love God? Now, by this we know that we know Him. Or that we love Him, even, you could say. If we keep His commandments, he who says, I know Him, but does not keep His commandments, he is a liar. There is no truth in him. But whoever keeps His word, truly the love of God is made perfect in him. There it is. If you keep God's word, the love of God is perfected in him. And by this we know we are in Him. So he who says, I abide in Him, remember one of our keys was to dwell with Him or abide with Him? He who says he abides in Him ought also himself to walk just as He walked. There's our answer. There's the key right there. If we are diligently obeying God, keeping His commandments, putting on holiness, righteousness every day, that means the love of God is in us, with us, perfect love casts out all fear. We have nothing to fear because we have that perfect love. No matter what happens, we are in the hands of a loving God where there's no better place to be. Now, we have a responsibility to come to this point in our lives, and we better be about it quickly. Do not fear. Do not be afraid. Once again, why? Let's keep asking, why? Okay, why? Why were you born? Remember that question that was asked of us time and time again many years ago? Good question still today. Talk to your kids about it. What is the purpose of life? Why are we here? Why did God call me? Why did I walk in this auditorium today? Once again, let's project ourselves into the future for just a little bit. I like doing this. I'm going to do it in the next sermon. I'm going to do it at the feast. During the opening hours and days of the world tomorrow, let's go there. Millions of people will be in fear, hopeless, despair. I suspect many of the survivors will believe that their death is imminent. They've survived so far. They don't know how. But what is it that just happened in Jerusalem? Not 3 or 4 hours ago. There was a devastating earthquake. It was a 10 on the Richter scale. Maybe an 11. Nothing like it had ever happened before. Mountains moved out of their places. They survived giant hailstones. Did you see them? Fire from the sky. There is no fresh water. There is no green grass. And now it looks as if there's been some sort of an alien invasion. What was that brilliant light in the sky? Was that really the return of Jesus Christ? No, that was the Antichrist. We have to fight him. No, it's aliens. I don't know what it is. How are we going to survive another day? Maybe we should leap off this cliff. It's so horrible. They are not going to be expecting what's about to happen. Isaiah 40. Look what else happens in these opening moments after the return of Jesus Christ. Isaiah has a lot to tell us about these first few hours of the world tomorrow. Exciting time. We're preparing for it. Isaiah 40, verse 9. Oh, Zion! That's another name for Jerusalem. Jerusalem, you who bring good tidings. Good tidings in Jerusalem, then? Get up into the high mountains, Jerusalem, you who bring the good tidings. Lift up your voice with strength, Jerusalem. Lift it up. Don't be afraid. And shout out, say to the cities of Judah, behold, your God. It's kind of like symbolic language here. You've got the city of Jerusalem personified into a being. She's told to not be afraid. She's told to lift up her voice and shout out to the entire nation, to the entire world, behold, this is your God. What's proclaimed by Jerusalem? Verse 1. Comfort. Yes, comfort my people, says your God. Speak comfort to Jerusalem. Cry out to her. Your warfare is ended. Your iniquity is pardoned. What incredible words to hear. The wars are over. There's no more fear. I don't have to be afraid. It's time for peace. There's talk of forgiveness for what I've done wrong. I didn't expect that. You say there's a new world coming? What is that? Isaiah 35. Isaiah 35, verse 1. The wilderness and the wasteland shall be glad for them. The desert shall blossom and rejoice as a rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice, even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, and the excellence of Carmel and Sharon. And they shall see the glory of the Lord. They'll see the excellency of our God. So strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees, and say to those who are fearful hearted, be strong. Do not fear. That's what we will be proclaiming to the people of the world tomorrow in those first hours and days after the return of Jesus Christ. Do not be afraid. Do not fear. Why not? Behold, your God will come with vengeance, with the recompense, with the divine retributions or revenge of God. God will come. He will save you. So fear begins to go away. Things begin to change dramatically. There is no fear now because there is no doubt who this man is, who this great God is. That's Jesus Christ on His throne. That's who that is. He's in control. I heard about something they call the Day of Atonement. Satan the devil has been bound. He's been put away. He was the cause of evil and death and destruction and war. But now this Jesus Christ, did you hear what He said? He'll save you. Brethren, it's the same thing with us right now, today. We can hear these words. That's why we don't fear today. It's because we know God's on our side. God fights our battles for us. God will intervene on our behalf. He will keep evil away from us. He's promised to save us. So many times we can read it over and over again. He promises that. And we have faith. We believe in the promise because we know God. We know who He is. He's God. We have a relationship with Him. We've seen it in action. What's the result of all this for the people of the world tomorrow? When they begin to understand these things, what's their reaction to it? Verse 5, the eyes of the blind are open. The ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. And the lame are going to leap like a deer. The tongue of the dumb will sing. Water shall burst forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. And verse 10, the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing and everlasting joy on their heads, and they will obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. That describes us right now, this week, today. It should describe our lives. It's what we experience to a certain degree in our personal lives as church members today, because our spiritual eyes and ears have been opened and healed. And we can hear and we can understand God. We know His plan, we know His purpose. And because of that, we are filled with happiness and joy. Everlasting joy, it says. A joy that passes all understanding. Because of how we know God is working in our lives. And we know how God promises to protect us and to provide for us. And so we do not fear. We are not afraid. Are we there yet? Can we proclaim with confidence that we do not fear what man can do? Are we really courageous and determined in the face of these extreme dangers and troubles that we see coming to us ever closer, coming to our nation? Well, you know, even though we're close, even though we can read about, and we have to watch it, if we watch the news, we watch these horrible things happening, it's not right here in North Carolina yet, is it? After services today, we can still go out to the restaurant. We can still go out to Walmart and fill our shopping bags with anything we want. Lowe's, Home Depot, whatever. Everything is there. Store shelves are filled. Clothes. We have gasoline. It's coming down in price a little bit. We go to work. We have jobs. So for the most part, we have everything we need. Life goes on as normal. But we've been told, and I've told you, that's going to change. Not always going to be like that. So when changes come, and things are not so easy anymore, will we still not fear? Because you know what? It's easy for us right now today to hear a sermon like this and go out here saying, "Oh, that's me. I'm not afraid. Nothing makes me afraid. I'm brave. I'm strong." Whoops. Hadn't happened yet, has it? What I'm saying is to prepare for it. Is that the time that we'll be fearful and afraid? Will we wonder? Will we doubt? Where is God? So we've got to take some time to consider what the future is going to be like. We've done it before, but we need to keep aware of that. Think about it, because it is a time of great tribulation. It is coming. It will be the worst that has ever happened in human history. We want to be protected from this. God promises His protection. My little granddaughter learned this week about a place of safety, and she wanted to get on the phone and tell me what she learned about the place of safety. Her parents taught her. And that's fine, because we believe that, and we can teach our children that. We can comfort them with that. Will we trust Him? Do we believe God to be our deliverer? There's a question that's recorded in Luke 18, verse 8, that's asked, will God find faith on the earth? That implies that the church may be reduced to a small number, and He'll have some difficulty finding that faith on the earth. Perhaps not that many will have the necessary faith to endure to the end. It seems that the faith of the faithful may have almost failed because conditions and the distress being so difficult when Christ finally does intervene. It says, except for the elect's sake. You know, those days are saved. They'll be cut short. It says some are given over to delusion because they didn't love God's truth with all their heart. So if you haven't exercised and strengthened this belief in advance, today, you cannot wait until a crisis arises to start a rock-solid faith in God to protect you and your belief that He will. The scripture in Luke 22 and verse 31 that I want to read for you, where God or Jesus Christ says to Simon, "Simon, indeed, Satan has asked for you that he might sift you as wheat." Jesus said, "I prayed for you, Simon, that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, Simon, strengthen the brethren." Their faith was, you recall what happened to the disciples at the time of the crucifixion. They all fled, they ran. Peter denied him three times. Remember the story? "I pray that your faith will not fail." When you return to me, Simon, you go strengthen the brethren. That's what we're doing today, isn't it? Satan wants God's people in the end time to fail. He's always wanted them to fail. But you have to ask yourself, will your faith fail, or do you have the confidence and know that your faith is strong? You cannot be moved. You are rock solid. That you can read the Psalms, like we're about to read some of these, that are filled with scriptures about trusting in God for deliverance. I hope they are part of our lives. I hope this is the hedge around us that Mr. Williams talked about in the sermonette. And we know that God has, in fact, set a hedge around us. Impenetrable hedge that cannot be broken. Psalms 18 and verse 1. You can read along with me, or you can just sit back and listen. But Psalm 18, verse 1. I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer. He is my God, my strength, in whom I will trust. My shield, the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. Verse 17. He has delivered me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity. But the Lord was my support. He also brought me out to a broad place. He delivered me because He delighted in me. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands, He has recompensed me. Because I have kept the ways of the Lord, and I have not wickedly departed from my God. So does that describe you? Can you say those words with all confidence? Will you be able to say those words tomorrow when the horrors of the evil of the world come close to us in North Carolina, where you are affected, when your life is in peril? We cannot be afraid. We must trust God. And we can conclude right there and say, well, does that really matter? Is it really all that important to God that we can say, yeah, I trust God, yeah. Without having that real conviction to know that we do, can we just leave it here? No, we can't. Revelation 21. Revelation 21, we have a very stark warning for us. Starts beautiful. Revelation 21, verse 7. He who overcomes will inherit all things. That's what we want to do. We want to overcome and inherit all things. Great, awesome, wonderful promises of God. I will be His God. He will be my son. Then you've got verse 8. But the cowardly, fearful, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, the second death. What? Godless, being afraid, not really believing? That's the same category as murderers who won't be in the kingdom of God. Why is that? Really very simple. Because after all we've covered today, if we are fearful and afraid, after reading all of God's promises to us, I promise to deliver you. I promise to protect you. I will be here. I am your rock. I am your fortress. Don't be afraid. Fear not. Trust me. After all His admonitions to do that, if we are still afraid, after all that, then we make God out a liar. That's telling Him, I don't believe you. I don't trust you. And that is not acceptable to God. And He will have no part of that. Because He's our Father. He does love us. We don't want our little children to be afraid of us in our own homes, do we? It'd be the same with us. Looking up to God, I don't trust you. I'm afraid of you. We want our little children to trust us. to know that we care for them and we will keep them safe. So does our Father. That's the way it should be with our Father. We trust Him. We believe Him. Do not fear. Do not be afraid. God has us safely in His arms. He will protect you. Fear not.